Thanks for joining us. Tonight, what's often lost in the highly charged fight over abortion? The individuals and the barriers that so often limit their choices. As the Supreme Court prepares to hear arguments next week on the highly restrictive Texas law, ABC's Janae Norman met some women who are putting aside politics and trying to help.
This community where you decided to bring Abide, why here?
Why not here? The entire southern sector of Dallas, which is predominantly Black and Latina community, the disparities are high. Heart disease, cancer, preterm birth, teen pregnancy.
Here in South Dallas, Cecily Smith sees inequality all around her. So when it came time to open her easy access clinic, Abide Women's Health Services, she wanted it to be here.
Our little part of creating a better world and creating a better environment for the families is Abide. So this is the waiting room education space.
Her priorities, life, and what she sees as its many forms.
Your stance on abortion isn't cut and dry.
It's not. I sit in the gray. At first, it was a very lonely place to be. It's an area where you have to do a lot of work. It's an area that you have to hold space for people that think differently than you.
The growing fallout from that Texas law banning most abortions.
The law makes abortions illegal after 6 weeks of pregnancy.
One of the most direct challenges to Roe versus Wade.
The conversation around abortion is often divisive, seen by both sides as right versus wrong. Now, with all eyes on Texas after a controversial bill which limits abortions as early as 6 weeks and the Supreme Court days away from hearing arguments, Cecily is part of a wave of people approaching the dialogue in a different way, not seeing the issue as Black or white, but living in what they call the gray.
This is a bigger fight than just marching in the streets.
More focused on the reasons.
We're not really listening to women that are faced with this decision.
And the resources.
The church should be one of the first places she runs to for healing and for hope.
Than just the hot button issue itself.
Where do you stand on abortion?
I wish that abortion wasn't a thing. I wish that women were not placed in a position where they felt that they needed to have an abortion.
You say that the issue of abortion has been politicized. What's the opposite of that?
The opposite of that is creating a culture of life. The healthcare system, the food insecurities, the lack of employment, housing inequities. There are so many systems that lead to death. And so when I think about abortion, I do believe it's an important topic. But it's not the only topic. It's not addressing the whole of humanity.
Cecily spent years as part of the anti-abortion rights movement.
Do you find on that spectrum that you can be pro-life without being pro-life enough, or you can be pro-anti-abortion rights without being pro-anti-abortion rights enough?
Absolutely, that's where I sit. The moment I began to speak more about the racial disparities in maternal health care, the racism, is the moment that things change for me within the movement. I walk hand in hand with people that are pro-choice, people that are pro-life. I want women, I want families, I want birthing people to be liberated. And I don't believe liberation comes from abortion. I believe true liberation comes from addressing all of the other factors that contribute to the statistics that we see.
Statistics that here are particularly stark. The life expectancy in this part of Dallas is 23 years less than just 9 miles north. Nationwide, Black women have both the highest abortion rates and highest rates of maternal mortality. They're 3 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related issues than white women. For Cecily, those are numbers and systemic drivers that can't be ignored in the discussion around what it means to choose life.
The goal of Abide is to support life from the womb to the tomb. What does that mean to you?
From the moment a woman or a birthing person becomes pregnant and they come through our doors, or even before, we're supporting them. We're creating a space where families will come long after they have children because they know it's a safe place.
Walking in, everybody was really welcoming and it felt like home.
For Michaela Henderson, who became pregnant with her daughter Kai at 17, Abide quickly became a place to ask questions and quell fears.
What was it like for you when you first found out you were pregnant?
It was like a rush of emotions. Sadness, fear. I never thought I'd be pregnant at 17.
Did you ever consider having an abortion?
At one point, yes, I did.
What even made you consider that option?
I was thinking, if I can't really take care of myself in all the ways that I need to, I don't think I can take care of a child. Finally, I decided to get my life together. Started working. I want to go to nursing school, so that's what I'm going to do.
Michaela decided to have her child, and by her side throughout was her mom, Shawana Carter. She knows full well the challenges of being a young mother.
I think I was able or tried to convey to Kayla that this is your choice. And I think because I lived it, it was different. And so it was able to remember what it felt like being 17 and watch her at 18 and say, okay, we're going to fight this thing together. Come on. We got a little girl to take care of. Let's go.
While the decision to have an abortion wasn't right for Michaela, she's quick to note that she is pro-abortion rights.
What do you think could be the lingering impacts of this law?
I think other states are going to try to follow in Texas' footsteps, but at this point, I don't think they should. A lot of women feel like their choices have been taken away from them.
Abortion rights! Abortion rights!
Across the country at the Women's March in Washington, D.C.
And then you all can come around.
That impact is something Monica Simpson is keenly aware of.
This is the most dire attack on our lives right now in terms of abortion access in this country.
Monica runs the Atlanta-based group Sister Song, which is focused on what they call reproductive justice and frontline in efforts to fight restrictive legislation like Georgia's own heartbeat bill.
We're looking at the right, the human right for an individual to be able to prevent or end pregnancies without shame and with dignity.
And for Monica, it's a conversation not only about legal right, but access and support.
It's not just thinking about, will I have a baby or not? It's thinking about, will I have enough money to take care of this child when this child gets here? It's about, will I be able to have access to the health care that I need to be able to make sure that I'm healthy as well as my children are healthy? It's thinking about all of those things.
Back in Texas, Amy Ford is focused on faith as a resource for those confronting unexpected pregnancy.
I had an unplanned pregnancy when I was 19 and almost had an abortion, and I didn't feel like I had anyone to go to for support. One big thing is that I went to church my entire life, every single week. And why did I not in that moment think, you know what, I'm scared, I don't know what to do. Maybe I should go to church and ask for prayer, wisdom, guidance. But it was the last place I wanted to go to.
Amy founded Embrace Grace, which helps connect those with unplanned pregnancies with churches and find resources through more than 700 support groups around the country.
God has amazing, huge plans for you. We want the church to be one of the first places a girl runs to instead of the last because of shame and guilt. That's true feminism, is you can have your baby in your dreams too. You don't have to sacrifice your baby in order to achieve your dreams. And we can make sure that you don't have to walk through this alone.
How do we get more people into the gray area to come out of their corners and to find some way to meet in the middle when it comes to abortion rights?
Just finding the commonality. What all can we agree on? One thing I feel like, for the most part, we can agree on is no one wants an abortion. You don't want an abortion, but you feel like you don't have a choice. So what we can agree on is, can we help her make an educated choice?
So in order to bridge this divide, I think it's important for us to create a space where we can all sit at the table together.
The gray area is where you can hold strong to your convictions, you can, but then you find a common goal that can end up benefiting everyone. The gray area is where the real work is. As long as we operate in extremes, we will continue to fight.
Our thanks to Janae. Up next, comedian Dave Chappelle. Some argue he's gone too far.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
There are those who consider Dave Chappelle to be a comic genius, but many say his latest special is once again making some critics wonder if it's more offensive than funny. Here's Nightline's Aushin Singh.
Am I canceled or not?
3 weeks later, comedian Dave Chappelle is still under fire.
New fallout from Dave Chappelle's latest special on Netflix.
The 48-year-old refusing to stand down to critics of his Netflix special, The Closer, that premiered earlier this month.
A lot of people in the trans community were furious with me, and apparently they dragged me on Twitter. I don't give a because Twitter's not a real place.
Many saying the jokes he's made in his new special crossed the line and are transphobic and dangerous.
Gay people get mad at me, lesbians get mad at me, but I'm gonna tell you right now, and it's true, these transgenders, these want me dead.
I felt heartbroken because I grew up a Dave Chappelle fan.
The show even prompting a walkout amongst employees and demonstrators at Netflix.
They feel as though their workplace is creating conditions that are not, you know, conducive to the respect for their humanity.
Yet the special's focus on an extremely marginalized portion of that community has many asking, why?
I am not saying that to say that trans women aren't women. I am just saying that those that they got, you know what I mean?
I think that Dave is brilliant. I think that he is not doing his best work. I think there's a genius way to talk about what he's talking about, and he's not doing that.
Meanwhile, others are using his performance as an opportunity to point out the hypocrisy in today's cancel culture and defending his ability to speak his mind.
I can't even believe that we're still talking about this 3 weeks later, honestly.
Now the comedian, igniting a cultural debate over freedom of expression and the struggles disempowered communities face.
Not afraid to say something super unpopular, but there's so much more to his comedy than that. When it's good, there, you know, he's always got an idea of who the, you know, the aggressor is in the power dynamics in the country.
In a recent video posted to Instagram, Chappelle said that his fight is not with the LGBTQ community.
This has nothing to do with them. It's about corporate interests and what I can say and what I cannot say.
For Chappelle, he says his comedy is merely social commentary. Trans activist Diamond Stiles has seen every Chappelle comedy special. And while she's used to the off-color jokes, that doesn't make them any less hurtful.
He's a comedian, and I understand this is their job to be funny. And sometimes we all are going to be at the end of the negative side of somebody's jokes. But as we all know, jokes and opinions can be offensive. We have seen an uptick in the deaths of Black trans women. These things that we think is, oh, it's just the culture, or it's just jokes, they actually lead to people actually harming and disrespecting us in public in our real lives.
It's not the comedian's first brush with controversy. Chappelle has long spent his career pushing boundaries. From his early days on Comedy Central, playing a blind KKK member on The Chappelle Show.
You better get out of here before something bad happens.
That's right.
That's right. Tell that big, dirty.
And comedy itself has a long history of courting controversy. From Richard Pryor.
But I just want to say this, like, look, I like drugs. I do.
To George Carlin.
Some of these words, they're only 50% dirty. You have words like ass. Ass is hardly even a dirty word anymore, but it has a few meanings that you can't say on television.
But in recent years, many comedians have owned up to past jokes that may have offended.
You had Eddie Murphy in the 80s. You can't play any of that stuff on television really anymore, probably rightly so. Murphy famously has apologized for a lot of the more prickly comedy. So it's really funny that Dave Chappelle thinks that there's not this, like, this evolving relationship between the comic and the audience and the material, and that you're just always supposed to be able to say whatever you like.
I'm in the bathroom changing tonight, two sisters in the bathroom. Girls, you see the man in the blue dress? I say, yeah, I'm in here.
Trans comedian Flame Monroe is also featured on Netflix. She says that the art of comedy, brazen and unabashed, is what's at stake.
What do you think about the state of comedy today?
I think a lot of comedians have been leery, and I think that social media did not help, because if one person says, oh, she said one thing to offend me out of an audience of 1,000, and that one person puts that up and gets 600 likes, it's just out of control with social media.
She says that jokes are meant to tell the truth, and that's just what Dave did.
In our country, you can shoot and kill, but you better not hurt a gay person's feelings. And this is precisely the disparity that I wish to discuss.
What are some jokes Dave makes that, you know, that is the line for you?
There is no line. If I give Dave a line, I have a line. I don't have a line. I'm just looking at it from the whole picture. I have three dogs in this fight. I am Black, I am transgender, and I am a stand-up comedian.
In his latest video, Dave agreed to meet with the trans community, but only on his terms.
She will not summon me.
But at the end of the day, however you feel, everyone seems to agree that this issue is just a distraction.
These are the issues of the day, and we're going to continue to talk about them as long as they are salacious, as long as they're provocative, as long as there's something for us to talk about, we're going to continue to do it.
His stuff is still up at Netflix. He made who even knows how much money off of it. He's playing arenas. Like, where's the consequence?
There is no clear winner or loser here, but Chappelle's blind spots might be forcing a different conversation. One that requires more listening than talking. Thank you.
It seems Congress can't agree on much these days, but both parties seem ready to hold big tech accountable. Senators today grilling executives from YouTube, TikTok, and Snapchat on the safety of children on their platforms.
I had my staff create a Snapchat account for a 15-year-old child. When they opened the Discover page on Snapchat, with its default settings, they were immediately bombarded with content that I can most politely describe as wildly inappropriate for a child, including recommendations for, among other things, an invite to play an online sexualized video game.
Content and community guidelines suggest that any online sexual video game should be age-gated to 18 and above. But these community guidelines and publisher guidelines that are on top of those guidelines are intended to be an age-appropriate experience.
Committee Chair Richard Blumenthal saying this is a moment of reckoning. And that's Nightline. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.